Welcome to the West Shore History Podcast. I'm Sue Harper, your host. This episode is entitled Mosses, Creeks, and Mountains, The Writings of Robert Connell. He was born in 1871 to Scottish parents in Liverpool, England. He was raised around Glasgow and worked as a shipping agent before moving to Canada at the age of 17, where he became identified with mission work in the Northwest Territories. In 1896, while living in Calgary, he was ordained as a priest, and in 1901, he moved to Victoria, where he served as rector of St. Luke's until 1908, when he left for California for 3 years. He returned to Victoria in 1911 and was appointed rector of St. Saviour's until 1923. He also became a politician in British Columbia, actually the first leader of the Cooperative Commonwealth Federation Party in British Columbia, now known as the NDP. However, for this podcast, I want to concentrate on Robert Connell, the naturalist. His writings on local geology and botany was extremely well known to Victorians at the time. He often led trips out of Victoria to the West Shore, Souk, and Saanich. Connell also sketched what he saw and taught art history and botany classes at Victoria High and St. Michael's University School. He wrote weekly columns on nature and geology for the Victoria Daily Times and later the Victoria Daily Colonist in the 1930s and 1940s. All of his articles were of local subjects, as is indicated by the titles, such as Birds of the Seashore, November in the Highland Hills, A Wanderer in Happy Valley, and so many more. He was also a member of the Victoria Natural History Society. So I'll concentrate on Robert Connell's own words, what he saw on his hikes of the Goldstream and Langford area during its early history. It paints a picture of what the area once was and what has been lost. April 4, 1937. In the years before the city allowed the logging of its Goldstream watershed, there existed once of the most beautiful of woodlands and creeks, reached by a road that turns sharply to the right just above Goldstream Station. Here, above the point where a creek falls steeply into the Goldstream Valley, there is a delightful little open space in the forest, the beginning of the entrance to the valley between Mounts MacDonald and Braden. Lofty trees openly spaced towards the broad mossy spaces through which a little stream wound its way among the great turfs of lady fern and triangular wood fern, that lovely plant of the moist and shady woodlands, with its plumes of creamy white flowers, grew there, together with fairy bells and twisted stalk. I made my first visit there in 1915. The last time I saw the place, the trees were felled and general destruction reigned in preparation of the logging railway, one of the loveliest spots in the vicinity of Victoria, ruined for all time. In an article published in 1939, he recalled seeing Goldstream for the first time in 1903. In 1903, I made my first visit to Goldstream. Much water has run under that bridge since then. We traversed the steep bank below the old hotel and its pleasure grounds and looked down on the old bridge, relic of the days of the gold rush that gives its name to the river. The deeply shaded banks with their rich growth of ferns and flowering plants, the moss-grown maples, the great cedars and hemlocks, and the vertical walls of dark rock, stained with lichens and tufts of maidenhair. A succession of delights, accentuated by the sound of the water as it tumbled over the rock. We looked with interest at the still remaining excavations made by the placer miners in gravel of the banks and at the more ambitious prospect holes in the quartz veins. It was all very exciting, with its mixture of forest and water and landscape, with a past not very far removed. Along the riverbank, where a creek meets Goldstream, I have passed a number of evidences of placer prospecting activity. Shallow pits have been dug, sluice boxes lie nearby, and at one point, a pipe brings water from a springy hillside. One can easily imagine some of the trails that ran by the river and through the forest are the same as those traversed by the early prospectors. They have been kept open by the feet of fishermen and plain pedestrians throughout the years. There are rocks not far worn, as they represent the types of materials called erratics, wanderers brought far from their native hills and mountains by glacial ice, tumbled about and transported by the ancient Colwood River that flowed from the retreating ice cap along this very valley we are in. Throughout 1938 and 1939, he hiked the area and continued to write about his experiences and what he saw. The road from Goldstream Station to the Hotel Flat is today a leafy tunnel where the branches and firs meet and mingle their needed foliage overhead. The long vista is gone, and at the end of which you saw on holidays and weekends not so long ago the happy crowds of picnickers. The old bandstand at Goldstream has taken on a new beauty, even in its decaying days. Nature has roofed over the shingles with the greenest of moss and covered all with a velvet pile 2 to 3 inches thick. This was the beginning of the old fir avenue to the station, trampled by thousands of holidaymakers in the old days. What a place it was for picnics! All kinds of organizations, from Sunday schools to political associations, gathered on the green turf and went down to the bridge and the river and the deep, cool shallows of the great maples. What dances there were to the music of the band, and what games of baseball to the cheers of spectators. We have so much wide open spaces today that I fear there will be few of this generation that will have in their hearts sweet memories as many of the older people have for Goldstream. A motor trip to Mexico or in New York probably doesn't mean as much to a boy or girl today as a drive in a buggy to Goldstream did to their grandparents. Few cars travel this way, except to the reservoir plant, and there is all quiet of a forgotten country lane. Meanwhile, along the avenue, a winter wren plays hide-and-seek, for there are suitable thickets along the field borders for the game. Off the Goldstream Road, a short distance south of the hotel, the Old Skirt Mountain Prospector's Trail turns off to the left. It runs along the ridge, high above the river, and then dips to a hollow to lose itself in the thicket of the broom. Having satisfied my curiosity, I return and a little further on, leave the road again, this time to investigate the ledge of rock outcrop of the Leech River, in the hope of finding some flowers. A hope encouraged by brilliant sunshine of the day. But instead of flowers, I find luxuriant beds of moss, occupying for the most part shallow depressions that retain moisture and the primitive soil, deprived largely from the daisy of the moss plants. Looking along the ridge, I see the vegetation like a dense but dwarf forest in which the various types of trees are indicated by the color of their massed foliage. Leaving the ridge, I return to the road. Not far had I gone before I came across an opening where a group of nuttall willows were still in flower. What made the willows particularly interesting was the presence of 3 species of butterflies, whose expanded wings threw the catkins into the shade. As you can see, the beautiful solitude and the value of the forest comes through in his writings. I'll continue on with some more. The pedestrian has the road to himself up here among the hills. No cars, no passers-by, no cattle are in the way. There is too much loose gravel to attract the driver for pleasure, and the scenery is beyond the motorist's eye. A dog lies in the garden of the waterworks caretaker, and further on, a pair of extremely woolly sheep look down on me. Close to the sheep, a flock of chickadees fly from one tree to another in a juvenile stand of second-growth fur. The slightest sound made by a wild thing, or by sheep and cattle running wild, so to speak, is precious to the country walker. A movement in the bushes, the faint rustling of the leaves, even the fall of a stone moved by an unseen foot, each has a value. I look up at the great cliffs and think what a wonderful place for a child's education. But it's sad to recall what this little valley looked like years before the Waterworks Department cut down the sheltering woods and excavated the peaty bottom, destroying the particular vegetation of its cool waters. Even nature, the great restorer, has been able to do little during the subsequent years to hide the appalling scar. Further along the valley flats, covered with groves of alder and maple, while cedar and hemlock become quite common, salmonberry abounds along the moist banks, its rosy flowers very attractive on the golden brown leafless canes. In drier places, the stems of black-cap raspberry make their usual arches, and the red huckleberry shows its young leaf buds. It's a pity that along an otherwise picturesque part of the road beside the creek, the tops of the larger trees have been sawn off, apparently in connection with the VI Power Company's transmission line, for it occurs along the northern boundary of their right-of-way. Connell's eye is amazing as he describes the geology and changing landscape through time. Later, I was ascending the slopes of Mount Skirt. The ancient volcanic tufts, which constitute its rock, have the same type of structure as the Leech River area, and as their strike is parallel to the hillside, the climber meets with a succession of low walls of rock, topped with broad, flattish ledges and with a steep slope of scree. The forest affords a good illustration of the changes that have taken place in the last century in many places at this end of the island. Previously, it consisted of oaks, with a few scattered, isolated Douglas firs. Some of these, on the hillside, are 5 to 6 feet in diameter, with great branches and a few feet above the ground, up, showing that they grew without competition from their kind. The oaks are now being smothered out by a younger fir forest, and here and there a large one can be seen, which maintains above the invading army its upper branches, full of vigor and life, while its lower ones have been killed out by the shade. Arbutus trees also occur in places, but none of them of great size. On the ledges of the rocks are blue-eyed Mary in flower. Fawn lilies are out, the flowering shoots of the lady slipper. The gold-back fern raises its fresh fronds over last year's dark ones, and the delicate-looking bladder fern is out in its new dress in the shady crevices. I came across a dozen juncos and song sparrows. In the distance, the voice of a flicker could be heard from a treetop. I can see through the trees the waters of Langford Lake glistening in the sun. It is very still. The flicker seems to have the whole auditorium to itself. Even the wind makes no sound, for the deciduous trees have not yet opened their leaves to its playing, and it's not as strong enough to arouse the needled branches of the firs. Descending down a slightly different course, I come across a pretty little brook that comes tumbling down the hillside. The rocks are thickly covered with mosses. A great fir spreads its branches across the water, and maples rise their mossy trunks skywards, awaiting the bursting of their buds in the spring sunshine. A beautiful yew, growing all by itself, has attained an unusual symmetry of form. It has grown into a tree of 30 to 40 feet in height. The bed of the stream is the home of moisture-loving mosses, and their rich, wet green sparkle in the sunlight. Our little stream picks up one or two companions on its way, and one wonders what feeds them. At one place, a solution in part is suggested by a small spring that runs out of the rock. There is something very appealing about water coming out of a rock, especially in lands where cold water is scarce. There is a mystery about it. I have known the day where, in the midsummer sun, nothing was available to drink but the warm, stagnant, larva-filled water of a pond. It is one of the delights of spring in the hills that everywhere there is cool, fresh water that you may drink enjoyably. And what fairer setting for the water could there be? Finally, Connell recounts his return to civilization. Returning to the junction of Souk Road, under the trees below the station, the shadows make a dusky tunnel through which the sunlight ground beyond appears as if seen through the wrong end of a telescope. Further on, in a little clearing by the roadside, two men are engaged in a game of horseshoes. Next, the highway is reached, and then the bus terminal. There, I see the swallows flying high over Langford Lake, the first of the season. I counted at least a dozen of them. While I wait, I get a charming view of the cattle resting in a meadow with a background of a dogwood thicket and taller willows and forest remnants. And beyond that, I look back at Skirt Mountain and the peep of distant hills where I've been. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the West Shore History Podcast and the small look at the writings of Robert Connell. He passed away on November 13, 1957, but he left behind an amazing wealth of local natural history observations. I'll be bringing you much more of his descriptions and writings in future episodes for your enjoyment. And don't forget, if you're enjoying the West Shore History Podcast, it's time for you to subscribe. You'll gain access to bonus episodes and written materials. Until next time, thanks for listening.